phone calls lowering blood pressure, health workers and trauma victims, and even a little exercise keeps you from getting too fat. Plus, we're going to take a look at pulmonary embolism. If that's what you're looking for, you found it. It's The Nursing Show. Well, good day and welcome to this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the show this week. We have a lot going on, but you know, we're rolling here into the first week of December 2009, and a lot is going on with the holidays, at least for me, and I assume for a lot of other people that listen to the show. So I want to make sure, you know, take a moment for yourselves. You know, one of the things I think that nurses don't do very well as far as caregiving is caring and giving to ourselves. And so I urge you to take some time during this holiday season and give yourself a little bit of pampering. Don't just be out there caring for your patients and caring for your families, but sit yourself down and give yourself an opportunity to have some time for yourself. I know I'm going to make myself do that because I'm just like the rest of you. I'm just another nurse, and I like helping people, and I like taking care of my family, and all these things add up to me being way too busy. So I just wanted to remind all of us that for the next month, let's make sure we take some me time. Want to remind you that as far as me time goes, if you need to follow up on anything that you've heard on the show and you need to get some additional information for yourself, head over to nursingshow.com. It's a great resource for you to not only see all the links to all the news items and links to additional resources for each tip of the week, but there are other articles that are posted throughout the course of the week. You can sign up for the email newsletter and get all the links for each episode sent to you every week. There's a lot of different things you can do over there. Follow our Facebook page and Twitter links right there on the front page of the site. You can get to all of that. So get over to nursingshow.com. You can also leave comments on the articles over there. If you check out recent articles and have something you want to share, please share them. We love to hear back from you. Still getting a lot of traction on that article on nursing students and tattoos. And if you haven't seen that article, you can head over and search for it in the search bar right there on the front page. Just search tattoo. It'll show right up. Leave your comments. We've had a bunch more comments come in this week. If you want to get back to me with a comment directly by email, definitely want to hear from you. Send those comments in to email address comments@nursingshow.com, and I'll get back to you right away. I'd love to hear from you. Let me know any links, any ideas for news or tip items. And yeah, if I make a mistake, please send in those corrections so we can get the information here for the Nursing Show community in the best way possible. So we talk a lot in our news articles over the last year and a half, 2 years here at the Nursing Show, looking at different types of nursing careers and ways in which nurses reach out to touch the lives of their patients. And we've talked about telenursing many times in the past. I mean, heck, we have Lisa Booz here talking about Poison Center information and updates all the time. And a lot of the people she works with at the Maryland Poison Center are RNs. And so we have telenursing reaching out to people in many different ways. An interesting story I found over at northjersey.com is a story about nurses reaching out to people that are dealing with different chronic health issues, things like high blood pressure, diabetes, any number of different things. Well, the recent team of doctors and nurses, Duke University Medical Center, went through and did a study where they did a monitoring plan and bi-monthly phone calls from a nurse for patients with high blood pressure. The intervention lasted for 2 years. It only cost about $400 per patient, so that's pretty pretty reasonable. And that including a blood pressure monitor the patient got to take home and use. So in effect, we got monitoring of these patients and management of these patients' blood pressure for 2 years for $400. In the midst of all the healthcare debate and reform programs and money-saving issues and everything else, this seems like a great plan. But did it work? Well, it seems that what happened was that the patients were divided up into groups, and we had control groups, and some of them were using just normal drug interventions with doctor visits. Other groups had devices and training to use them, but were left on their own. Another group was offered monitoring by nurses for healthy living options. And finally, a group that had both home monitoring and nursing follow-up calls. Can you guess which group had the most successful attempt at lowering their blood pressure and managing their blood pressure over time? That's right. The people with the nurses' calls. When a nurse was able to call, answer any common health questions that they might have regarding their blood pressure, and I'm sure they got asked questions about other things too, because you develop that relationship with your patients. Certainly, the patient's going to feel more comfortable bringing up other things. But certainly, the patients had the ability to get their concerns addressed. If they were having side effects from a medication, if they were dealing with issues in their diet, all of these things could be addressed by the nurse's calls every twice a month. And so these patients were able to understand how their trend was going. They were able to talk to nurses about what was working and what wasn't working. And the nurses could do what nurses do best, develop a care plan, and then institute that care plan and educate our patients about what to do. And this is a great opportunity for all of us to look at implementing a program like this in our communities. I think this is a great opportunity to reach out and help patients in a very broad way that's going to have a significant effect on overall lifestyle and patient health. Moving along from that happy ending tale. We look back again at the shootings at Fort Hood this past November, and all the things that were going on there and all the things people were dealing with, looking at treating trauma victims. And if you don't know the story or don't remember, a military psychiatrist has been accused of going in there and shooting people in the center, the military center in which he was treating patients as a psychiatrist. And, you know, this is a tragedy, and there are a lot of things that may have been indicators of other problems. You know, that's all been discussed ad nauseum. The thing I want to point out here is that we all take a little bit of our patients' pain and ails and woes with us when we help them deal with their problems. And if we don't have a competent way or a good way of managing our own stress, then we can end up having our own issues. And I think that this is a good opportunity to talk with yourself. If you're talking to yourself, maybe you have a whole other set of issues, but you know what I'm saying? Really have some introspective time. Talk with your coworkers, talk with your family and your loved ones about, you know, ways that you affect the life around you because of stress you bring home from work. And then let's find a way to deal with that. You know, the time to deal with work-related stress and post-traumatic stress and everything else is not after the fact, but to develop good coping factors before you have stress overloading you. And if you have good coping mechanisms, if you have an exercise and fitness plan, if you have a healthy diet initiative, all of these things can lead to a healthier you and ultimately can give you the outlet you need to deal with some of these things. You may still need to seek some counseling, and that's, you know, part of life, but you may well be better able to deal with some of the minor issues on your own and have a coping mechanism built in place. Certainly for all of you nursing students that listen to the show, this is something you should consider, and you should think about how you deal with stress in your life. And, you know, it's okay to go out drinking and hanging out with your friends sometimes, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it's the best way to deal with stress. Alcohol is not a good stress reliever as a long-term coping mechanism. I think we can all agree about that. So I look at this article I found at CNN.com. There's a link in the show notes. And I also would urge you to look into resources either in your facilities or if you're a student in your schools, talk to your instructors and see what they recommend and some of the things that you can put together. Maybe this is a great project for you and your classmates next semester. Speaking of exercise as a coping mechanism, what is a good amount of exercise for you to get? How much is too much? Well, probably we have very few people who are getting too much exercise, but certainly how little is too little? And so a study and a survey instituted by, looks like Gallup Healthways has created a well-being index. And they really looked in this survey at people and how much they were exercising and examining their exercise and trends in their weight and overall well-being. And interestingly enough, this study found, a survey found, that people that even could get in 30 minutes a couple days a week of exercise had a decent effect on their levels of obesity. It helped fight off some of the issues that they might expect to have. So I think that this is something that we need to keep in mind. We have so many people that are talking to us about how busy they are. Heck, we're probably telling each other how busy we are. Yet it seems that even a little bit of extra exercise can have a significant effect on overall well-being and health and can help us move towards a more moderate and effective exercise program. So I urge you to take a look at the link in this article and follow up on this and see if you can find a way to institute some ideas on short bursts of exercise, 30 minutes, maybe two or three times a week. For the tip of the week this week, we're going to be talking about pulmonary embolism, or PE. So let's dig into that topic. First of all, in our objectives, we're going to be looking what is PE. We're going to talk about causes and risk factors like we do for a lot of these things. We're also going to be talking about some of the common symptoms of PE and some of the conventional wisdom that may be mistaken about pulmonary embolism. And we'll talk a little bit about that as well. Also, we're going to look at some of the treatments and nursing interventions for pulmonary embolism as well, and understand a little bit about how we can impact our patients' lives, because patients who develop PE usually have a problem elsewhere in their life or are now at higher risk for some other issues, and we need to make sure our patient education chops are ready to go, you know, kind of get ourselves geared up for good patient education. So what are we talking about with pulmonary embolism? Pulmonary embolism, also called PE, is essentially a blood clot that forms in the pulmonary arteries. It is a blood clot that forms as a result of other issues. It's most commonly associated with other medical problems, including DVT. And as you can tell now, we're kind of doing this whole progression, talking a couple weeks ago about anticoagulant labs, understanding PT, PTT, how INR works, all those things. And now we're moving through DVT and now ending up here at PE. And pulmonary embolism presents and causes a problem that I've heard called ventilation perfusion mismatch. And if you think about that, it's something that was taught to me when I was back in my paramedic realm before I became a nurse. And it stuck with me because I think it's a good way to represent this particular issue. Ventilation perfusion mismatch. We have a patient who has good ventilation, listen to their breath sounds, and they may be clear all the way down to the bases. We hear good airflow. So why are they short of breath? We have a patient who is showing signs of poor perfusion, and yet we don't see any clear cardiac signs early on. We don't see any reason on the respiratory assessment where this is why there's a problem. And yet we have this confused mismatch. We have signs of poor perfusion, but we have signs of good blood flow, and we have signs of good ventilation. Where is the problem? Well, the problem is, in fact, where ventilation and perfusion come together in the lungs. So let's talk a little bit about that. Come the common causes of pulmonary embolism. I said already it's a side effect of other problems. The things that can cause a pulmonary embolism are associated with something called the Virchow triad, V-I-R-C-H-O-W triad. I have never seen this on a test, but it is one of those things that you can bring up and drop somewhere and wow people with your amazing knowledge of pulmonary embolism. But even if you don't, you should understand these three things. Let's talk about them. Venostasis, vessel inflammation, and hypercoagulability. Anybody heard that before? Sounds really familiar, especially if you listened to last week's episode on DVT. Because in fact, these three things are the causes of deep venous thrombosis as well. Venous stasis, pooling of the blood, vessel inflammation or damage to the blood vessels, traumatic injury to the blood vessels, hypercoagulability related to genetic predisposition related to some disease processes, and all of these things gang up to form a blood clot elsewhere in the body that either some or all of it breaks off and goes to the lungs through the vena cavas and then into the right side of the heart, pumped out into the pulmonary arteries, where it lodges somewhere in the system of the pulmonary arteries. And depending on how much blood flow is blocked through the lungs, can cause either some or all of the ability of the body to exchange gases with the blood in the alveoli, can cause some or all of that to break down. Of course, if all of it breaks down or enough of it breaks down, we end up having very little oxygenated blood getting through to the left side of the heart. And so we end up with patients that go into cardiac arrest. That's worst case scenario. Even in best case scenario, we have patients that could be chronically tired or worn out because they're just not oxygenating well. And because they're young and relatively healthy in other ways, they don't draw this to an underlying problem where they may be developing DVT. Risk factors, just the same as DVT in many cases. Recent travel or periods of immobility, this is a very serious problem for our homebound patients, patients who are morbidly obese, sedentary, who work in offices and sit down all the time, people like podcasters who sit in front of a microphone a lot of the day. You can see that anything that has them sitting down and causes that vena stasis in a portion of their lower extremities can be at risk for blood clots. Patients who have had recent childbirth, recent OB or orthopedic procedures, and hormonal birth control or estrogen therapies, all of these increase your risk factors for forming of blood clots. And of course, anytime you form more blood clots, you have an increased risk for pulmonary embolism. So what signs and symptoms? Well, the classic signs and symptoms, the big three that I learned years ago, are not the most reliable according to some recent studies. And I have some links in the show notes I urge you to read. Those three are hemoptysis, shortness of breath, chest pain. Hemoptysis, of course, is blood in the sputum. We see this a lot sometimes with some of the CHF patients where blood, plasma is being pushed into the lungs. They're having that flash pulmonary edema going on, and we start seeing some of that frothy pink sputum. That can be a sign associated with PE, shortness of breath, and chest pain. However, if you think about it, I just described something that has to do with CHF. I just described shortness of breath. Shortness of breath can be anything. It could be asthma. It could be anxiety. It could be associated with a cardiac problem. Chest pain, chest pain could be related to anything as well. Very non-specific symptoms. And in fact, some of the surveys and studies I looked at recently have really determined that in many cases where the patient died from a pulmonary embolism, these classic three symptoms were present in not even the majority of cases. So certainly something to keep in the back of your mind, but it is not necessarily the primary symptom that will be reported to you. So, these are things to look for, but certainly not as the classic symptoms of PE, not enough to rule out pulmonary embolism. And in fact, one of the things that I discovered was that pulmonary embolism is diagnosed as often during autopsy as it is in the emergency department. So clearly we're under expecting pulmonary embolism, if you accept that terminology. It's mistaken often for other problems, dot onset asthma, patients without a cardiac history, they may determine this is a new onset cardiac sign and symptom. But patients that have no other history, probably we should be thinking PE more often than not. Respirophasic chest pain is one of the signs and symptoms that came up. And this is basically chest pain associated with the respiratory cycle. It hurts when I breathe in. It hurts when I breathe out. And patients, maybe somebody will say, well, that could sound like a traumatic problem. They have an injury and a bruise or a pulled muscle. Well, exactly, which is why pulmonary embolism is so hard to detect. definitely want to get a good history on these patients. And because of that, if you can determine that a patient was at risk for DVT, recent travel, maybe a recent illness that kept them in bed for a long period of time, maybe they've been working on long project hours at work and have been seated stationary for long periods of time working at a computer, all of these things can cause a patient to have increased risk for DVT. And if you can point that out, then you may be a long way down the road of figuring out that this might be a pulmonary embolism. What about nursing interventions for PE? Well, if you're working in the home care environment or in a doctor's office or you know, you're talking to a neighbor, this patient needs to go to the hospital. And we talked about why. If they have a PE, that means a blood clot broke off from somewhere. It means more of that blood clot could break off and go into the lungs. It means that the blood clot in the lungs could be moved along into another part of the pulmonary artery system, and it could certainly cause a greater blockage, a greater level of blockage, and cause cardiac arrest. So these patients need to be in a hospital facility monitored immediately. We should be treating these patients gently. Now, I know we're not smacking around our patients, but, you know, when given the option, because these are generally, you know, a lot of times could be younger, healthier patients, we should not encourage them to do a lot of things for themselves until we narrow things down. We should be encouraging them to remain still, remain calm. We don't want to elevate their blood pressure. We don't want to do anything that would push that clot anywhere than where it is right now, because right now they're alive, alert, and talking to you in most cases. If that moves, that could change. So we don't want to move that clot. Also, you know, O2 IV monitor. Patients may be candidates for thrombolytic therapy, so you need to review those medications and that are available in your facility and be prepared to educate your patient and be prepared to administer them safely. Certainly, you don't want to, when you have IVs going, and in facilities, this isn't so much of a problem because everybody's using IV pumps for things right now, but we don't want to have any situation where we would be flowing too much fluid into the patient. This is a situation where we don't want to hydrate our patients too much, at least initially. Again, anything that will increase blood pressure, anything that will increase the or decrease the viscosity of the blood could move that clot. So we don't want to do that. However, anticoagulant therapy will probably be started immediately as well. We're talking starting off with heparin and then moving our patients into oral warfarin treatments. My wife recently had a pulmonary embolism back in the end of the summer, and she was sent home with Lovenox injections. So in the hospital for a day or two to dial in her INR, and then she was sent home to be monitored at home and go ahead and administer her own injections while she gets the heparin started, and then lets warfarin take over. Lab monitoring and patient education are going to be key here. Again, go back 2 weeks ago, before this episode aired, we talked about anticoagulant labs. So go back and review that episode if you need to talk a little, to review your knowledge of the PT, PTT, and INRs and how those labs work. And also be prepared to educate your patients, because your patients are going to be going and getting these labs once they're released from the facility. And it would help for them to understand a little bit about them and understand that this is your target number. You want to have an INR between 2 and 3. You know, find out what the suggested INR is for the physician that's going to be handling this patient, and then relay that information so they can ask the right questions. Patient education is key, whether it's changing diet, whether it's changing lifestyles. This patient is now at risk for blood clots for the rest of their life, and they need to understand what that means. They need to understand that a more active, healthier lifestyle is really in order for them, and to change the way they handle things. Find out what risk factors cause the blood clots, and then help them find ways to alleviate those risk factors if possible. Don't forget to follow up on this particular tip segment. You can find a lot of other resources. I've got a couple of good links to some great resources on pulmonary embolism, not just for you, but if you have a patient with pulmonary embolism, you can point them to some of these links as well. Good descriptions and explanations with pictures. So check it out over at nursingshow.com in the show notes section for this episode, and you can follow up on the additional information we've provided there. And that's going to wrap up this week's episode of The Nursing Show. I want to remind everybody that you need to check back in for the show notes for everything discussed in this episode. All of the news items, tip files, and other links mentioned are all available in the show notes for this and every other episode. And you need to follow up on the information because I can provide only general information here. It's your job to follow the links and look at the resources and see how they apply to your own scope of practice. I'll do my job here and get you as much information as I can. It's your job to follow up, make sure that the information gels with what you know and what you're supposed to be doing in your area. I'd like to urge all of you to comment and get back in touch with me here at The Nursing Show. You can reach me, of course, by leaving comments over at nursingshow.com. There are comment links at the bottom or near the top of every single article. You can also reach me by email, comments@nursingshow.com. And you can also get a hold of me over at Facebook, facebook.com/podmedic, or you can follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/podmedic. Time to close out the show with some holiday music again this week as we close out the year. And this is a song from a band by the name of Basic, and this is the classic Christmas carol, Joy to the World, with a little bit of rocked out feel to it. So if you like what you hear, definitely follow the link in the show notes. Let the band know that you like what you heard. And there is even a link that you can go ahead and purchase this song over at iTunes. So, you know, spend 99 cents, pick up this song and maybe some of their other songs from this album and enjoy the holidays with this band. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. That's it for this episode. I want to remind you of one thing, though. Don't forget to remember to stay safe and stay tuned here to The Nursing Show. Take care.
Joy to the world, the Lord.